Welcome to PNC C-Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host, Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Thanks, Josh. It's great to be here today. Would you believe it if I told you that according to the U.S. Census, 87% of all businesses are family-owned?
I would have guessed a high percentage, but maybe closer to 50%. It doesn't surprise me. We read about successful family businesses that make up such a big part of our economy. We write about it, multi-generational businesses and stories. So yeah, that rings true.
Los Angeles definitely has its share of family-owned business success stories. These businesses are the backbone to our region's economy, which doesn't suggest that they don't have their own set of unique challenges. From access to capital, to growing pains, to unique family dynamics, succession planning, family businesses are very special, but often challenging.
Yeah, I think as a publisher, the most fascinating part of family business has always been about their stories. They share their stories with us. We share their stories with our readers. And we've had a chance to interview and write about some of the most successful businesses in the country, which is really exciting. Today's no different. We're excited to have one of the most well-known family names in Los Angeles here with us in studio.
The Porto name is synonymous with outstanding food, a world-class bakery, and one of the most impressive success stories of any family business here in Los Angeles. From his humble beginnings in Cuba to serving over 2 million guests a year and expanding into venues like downtown Disney, Porto's is a true Southern California success story.
Today, to share his family's story about roots, legacy, growth, and the passion behind Porto's Bakery and Cafe, let's meet its president, Raul Porto Jr. Welcome to C-Speak.
Thank you for having me here. Really excited to share with you our story. It's a very unique story. Not many businesses are born in a communist country like ours was and started by a woman where being an entrepreneur is illegal.
Wow. That's just amazing. We have a chance today to share a little bit with our listeners. Let's go back. You have such a story to tell. How did Porto's come to be?
So back in the 1960s, mid-60s, my parents applied to immigrate to the United States from Cuba. And at that time, whenever you applied, the government would immediately basically categorize you as just an enemy of the state of sorts. So they both lost their jobs, and the men were sent to work camps. Women were left to tend to the children. There were no welfare or any services or whatever. So my mother started making cakes out of the house just to be able to survive and feed the family. When we landed in the United States, she didn't know what she was going to do. And at that time, she tried to get a job as a baker, but she wasn't able to because in those days, women, you know, for starters, flour bags were 100 pounds, so it was mostly a man's job. So she continued to do the same thing that she did back in Cuba, which is baking out of the house.
Can you share a little bit about what it was like for you and your sisters growing up with your mom running this bakery?
You know, so the first 5 years or so, she was baking out of the house. Yeah. Probably as a child, what I remember the most, you know, we lived in a small apartment, was the blender going on all night long and kind of became my background sound. And she really did most of it when we were kids. We opened a small bakery in 76. My sisters and I were young children, and we helped out as much as we could. That's how we started.
When did you first realize that bakery or the baking was going to be a success?
Contrary to what you see now, you know, because of technology and the internet, places open up and they're a hit on day one. Back then, it was really challenging. People weren't going out as much. Customers weren't spending money. So it took a long time for us to really catch on. I would say probably when we moved. So we were in...
Where was this first bakery located?
So the first bakery started in LA.
Okay.
It was a tiny little place, about 300 square feet or so. And really the only employees were my two sisters, myself, my mother. My dad worked at another job in order to pay the bills. So it was just the three of us, the four of us, kind of tending to the business. It was really slow at the beginning. And also, you know, one of the things that's unique about us, keep in mind, my parents came from a communist country where there were no entrepreneurs, no teaching, things we take for granted in this country. Since an early age, you're reading about, you know, somebody that opened this company or a young kid who started an app. In Cuba, you don't hear or see any of that. it took us a long time to become comfortable or even to become entrepreneurs, really. At the beginning, I think we just opened it, and my mom's dream was just to be able to help feed the family, and that was it. So unlike, you know, most businesses where you see them, where they open and they have five-year plans and they're going to grow this and that, I think ours started really humbly, just a mother trying to help feed the family. And that was the only, she couldn't get a job, so she thought, okay, this is how I'm going
to
do it.
I mean, that's so inspiring that she was able to do that. And each of you were able to ultimately participate and get involved. As we look at Porto's menu, it's deeply rooted in Cuban culture and also family tradition. How do you adapt the menu to appeal to a broader audience? You know, here we are, Los Angeles, one of the most diverse cities in the world. How do you do that while staying true to culture and family roots?
I would say probably the first 10 years, we were catering mostly to Hispanics and mostly to Cubans. It didn't take long to recognize the Cuban population was very small. You would never be able to grow. And a lot of the retirees were moving back to Florida, warmer weathers, and then the younger generation were moving to other states or getting married. And, you know, that we would lose basically our customer base if we didn't start adapting and introducing our products to the general public. I don't know that we knew the terms or the thought. We just thought it was a logical thing to do at the time. And we started focusing on that. So we wouldn't advertise in like Cuban newspapers. We would do it in either Mexican newspapers or actually Filipino. We started early on doing that just because right next to us, one of our neighbors at the location we were in Glendale was a Filipino newspaper, and he would trade us advertising for food. He had all his meetings there, and we were getting free advertising.
It's not a bad trade, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, and it worked out well for both of us, actually. So it was a lot of fun, and we started adapting more general products by that. You know, a perfect example is the mousse cake, which is really more French pastry. But then what we did was most of them are either chocolate or strawberry. So we made ours mango, and that was one of the first ones we made. So we put our own spin on things and tried to appeal to the general audience and to our customers. And that's probably one of the best things we ever did, because we're a Cuban bakery at heart, but our demographics are everybody in California. People ask me all the time, do you like to be in Hispanic neighborhoods or what kind of neighborhoods? And I say, no, Hispanics only make up 40% of our customer base.
Okay.
So it really is, it's a picture of California and Los
Angeles.
Exactly. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when we look for new locations, we really don't pay attention so much to demographics, more just is there's enough density in the area, then we know, you know, that we'll figure out how to sell and how to cater and take care of that customer base.
I am curious, what was the first non-bakery item that you introduced? What food, non-bakery food item?
Yeah, you know, I love to tell you that we had this marketing plan, but it wasn't thought through. We were making great bread and we added coffee, and then it just rolled on from there. Somebody would say, hey, you have coffee, you have great pastries. How about a lunch item? So, well, I would make bread. Let's make a Cuban sandwich, right? Which is world famous.
Yeah.
So then we started making a Cuban sandwich, and then somebody said, hey, how about a turkey? Okay, well, we'll make a turkey. At one point, we were making pastrami, roast beef, and things like that. And, you know, and then later on, as we ourselves, and I think that was probably, you know, one of the most interesting and I'm not going to say challenging, but one of the funnest part was my family and I growing as business people. We learned little by little and became more deliberate in how we did things. Back then, we were just trying to survive, making all sorts of pastries that later on we kind of said, well,
let's off the menu eventually.
Yeah, took off the menu, and we used to make donuts. Most people don't realize that we made donuts for years. We make a lot of Mexican pastries. And then we thought we need to create a more like a Cuban bakery. So we narrow it down and focus and just little by little continue to learn and evolve from that.
You talked a little bit about, obviously, Cuba. You know, you didn't learn about entrepreneurship. There was no mentors. There was no examples. Well, how did this lead to challenges in building the business? Talk about some of the major obstacles you had to overcome.
You know, as we, well, from the start, getting capital was the hardest thing. And then getting customers the first, you know, 5 or 7 years or so were really challenging. You know, we probably, you know, just made enough money. It was probably less than if my mother had a job. And all of us were working like crazy, my two sisters and I. We would go to school, come back, and you know, just like you see a lot of immigrants in Southern California, families, business, small family businesses. The kids are, you know, doing their homework in the back and working and tending to customers. That was kind of our lifestyle. But I would say, you know, we were blessed and that we, because we didn't have a lot of employees, it was just a family, our overhead was very low. We continued to grow slowly at the beginning. And then I would say when we moved to Glendale, we really started catching on. And then we grew pretty fast. And in Glendale, we're actually on the same block, we moved three times to larger locations, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. You mentioned there's six current locations now. And as we're driving around Los Angeles, we see the Porto's locations. We always know one's fairly close. From an operational standpoint, what did you do to implement and maintain the high standard of excellence across all six of your locations?
I think that had a lot to do with the fact that we didn't grow very fast. We didn't open the second store for almost 20 years or so. The family learned our craft really well. We're good at you know, you read about continuous improvement, and I don't know that I knew that word, you know, 20 years ago. But without realizing it, I think our bakery probably, I mean, that's probably, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, say something that describes you guys. And I would say it's probably continuous improvement. And I think that did it for us. And we were blessed with a few products. Customers really loved, like the cheese roll, their number one product. Customers love that. And the volumes that we sell are so great that it helps us to make them more efficiently than if you sold 10 or 20 of them a day.
Now, for example, with the cheese roll, was that a customer bringing that idea to you, or were you guys introducing it to the customers?
A friend, we went to a bakery show, and a friend that owned a bakery in Miami basically told us, oh, you should make this pastry, and it's really good. And he gave me the recipe, and we perfected it even, and these are his words, not mine, a lot better than his.
And, did he sell your recipe back now?
No, he never did. He never did. He said, you know, his customers were used to
his taste. Yeah.
But he said, yours is much better. And I think that helped us a lot. We became really good at making these products in an efficient manner. And then it just built from there. And you know, then now we're able to buy ingredients directly from manufacturers. We have a large warehouse and we make contracts, things we couldn't do at the beginning. One of the key things to our success was the fact that I worked in the back of the bakery for maybe 20 years of my life while I was going to school, after I graduated from college, and my two sisters too, and we all came back to work with the bakery. And I think that helped us a lot.
Well, I think that the two words that I will take with me today, continuous improvement.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk for a second about your legacy and the company's legacy. PNC's 11th Global Family Business Survey found 78% of the respondents viewed their business as the most important asset in the family, and 72% wanted to ensure that business stayed in the family. Despite that, very few, only about a third, had actually a robust, documented succession plan. Porto's is a successful legacy business. How did your parents handle that with you, and how are you ultimately thinking about that with your family?
That's something that that I think a lot about, getting close to that retirement age. I don't think it's going to happen, but we do think about it. And currently there's, so my sisters and I have between us seven children. So the third
are
generation.
Are they all involved in the business?
Four of them are.
Okay.
And two are chefs. The other ones, they all went to college. You know, we really pushed that education. My parents did the same thing. And, you know, to be honest, I didn't know what to expect. The bakery business or the restaurant industry in general is a really tough business. I mean, it's not a job. It's your life, basically. I didn't want to push that on my kids or put any guilt trips. Before my mother passed away, we had a conversation about her wishes. She said, I know you'll make the right decision. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You'll make the right decision. Whatever decision you guys make will be fine with me. I mean, obviously, when your mother starts a business out of the house, it has special meaning. For us, it's not just a business. I mean, this is something that's, I don't know how to explain it, but it's special. My goal was always for the third generation to take over. I wasn't sure that was going to happen. One of them is a chef, and he went out after graduating from culinary school. He actually got a bachelor's and then went to culinary school and then went out and worked in three or four of the local restaurants. And my other son got into private equity. And another one was actually in radio. And so they all went out there, and I didn't know that they would come back. But within the last 2 years, all four of them have come back, eager to take over the business and continue the legacy of my mother.
How do you think their vision for growing the businesses might differ from your vision? Or how does the business evolve?
That's a really good question. I'm really happy, actually. I think they share the same vision, for lack of a better word. You know, what I mentioned about the way we grew up and we see the customer, about pricing and maintaining the respect for that customer.
I've heard you talk about growth, but what you most importantly talked about was servicing the customer, servicing the community, being fair, delivering fair prices.
Yeah, consistently.
Consistently.
Yeah. We never thought about growth. Even day one, my mother, she wanted just make enough money that I can help my family. And that's it. And I think that probably stayed with us for a long time. We continue to grow is because the bakeries get so full that we actually feel bad for the customer experience. And like, perfect example is the last store that we opened was in the city of Northridge. And the reason we did it in the city of Northridge, because the store in Burbank was basically over capacity or overtaxed or whatever. Basically, our growth model, which is probably not common, is to cannibalize
the busiest stores.
Yeah. And maybe other stores have done that, I'm not sure. But that's kind of what we do. But no doubt the new generation's younger, more energetic, and born in this country, so they have a different vision from that. They do share in the same ethics, values, respect for customers, and desire to carry on my mother's legacy. So that's fun for us. And
you know, there's no greater known family business in Southern California than Disney, right? And it is an iconic brand here in Southern California, the United States, and worldwide. I know you guys are doing a partnership now with Downtown Disney and opening up a unit down there. So talk a little bit about that opportunity.
So that's a really exciting idea. Disney came to us and we thought it was natural because most of our customer base is really families, mostly actually young families with kids. And we thought, okay, well, this is a natural. And we had really good conversations with them. You know, it took us 6 months in talking before we decided. We didn't jump on it right away. One of the most interesting parts is this will be the first time we're doing not just a bakery, but we're actually doing a restaurant too. So we're going to do a Cuban restaurant.
The first one?
First one ever.
Sit down, full service?
Yes. Yeah. So that's going to be really unique and it's going to be, I mean, amazing. It's going to be two stories. The second story will be so close to the entrance of Disney that we'll be 20 feet from the entrance of California Adventure and right across from the main entrance to Disneyland.
I know exactly where you are.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting. Excuse me?
What's the timing of this?
Probably about 2 years. We'll be tearing down the existing building that's there and we're going to build a brand new facility and it's just going to be gorgeous. And we're really excited about that. You know, after years of mostly fast casual type of food, we thought, this is the time to showcase more Cuban, Spanish food. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Full service restaurant, full bar, new menu items. What should the customers expect here?
You're going to get the similar experience that we have at all the stores. We wanted to make sure that a lot of customers that, you know, love the current experience, that they show up and say, well, this is not Portals. What is this? And so that's one. And then in addition to that, you know, my mom was a really good chef. Basically, we're going to showcase some of her recipes and add some new ones. I think it'll be a really fun project to take some of her recipes and our culture and do what we've done with our food and the drinks too. I mean, who doesn't love a mojito?
No doubt.
All right, let's talk customers. Todd shared in his opening comments that you're serving more than 2 million guests each year. We talked about operations and efficiencies. Are you using technology today to improve overall operation efficiency? Is it something that you have embraced? Tell us about that.
So for sure, technology, I mean, is becoming a bigger part than ever, and we have embraced it. We're building a bigger team to achieve all of that. And it helps. I mean, it helps a lot. In making the process more efficient. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is taking care of the customers, making sure that we exceed their expectations on every visit. That's our main goal.
Basics, yeah.
Yeah.
So restaurants were obviously hit very hard during the pandemic, and several well-known establishments closed. What was the effect of the pandemic on your business? What forced you to innovate, be creative? How did you do that?
The pandemic was probably one of the toughest parts for me. I had been running the bakery maybe 15 years or 20. My parents had retired. I've never experienced stress like that one year. One day we're open, doing great. I mean, the business was crazy. 2019 was probably the peak for almost every restaurant out there. And then all of a sudden, you know, we need to close. We were really concerned because of the volume of customers we have inside the building. So we closed on a Friday. And by Monday or Tuesday, we had opened again. And we really did something we're really proud of. We changed our business completely. Instead of customers coming into the building, we went 100% online. We actually didn't have a software platform where people could order. Over a weekend, we set it up.
Wow.
And we opened 3 days later or so. And then what we did, we actually did sort of like a drive-through, and customers would come in, check in the order. And then at first with the radio, we would call in the number and then we would bring it in. And it was really interesting. I worked maybe 3 days, those first 3 days, trying to figure out how to do it. And we realized that even though it worked well for, let's say, you know, half of the customers, especially the elderly customers, still wanted to walk in and place their order. And at the beginning, it had its challenges, but towards the end, we were doing really, really good. Yeah. We were super impressed. And the customers loved it. Nobody had to stand in line. You know,
has any of this stuck?
The online stuck, and it's now maybe 20% of our sales or 25%.
What a great example of embracing technology out of necessity and then figuring it out and now incorporating it into the business model.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. And to be honest with you, it's really our history. We're put in difficult situations and we figure out how to survive it. And during COVID, a lot of restaurants closed completely. And we decided to stay open, not just for our team, but also for our customers too. We thought, you know, there's a lot of people that really depend on us. And as crazy as that might sound, especially during those difficult times, we were selling cakes like crazy. We stopped doing larger cakes. We just went to small 9-inch cakes that a family could enjoy at home. They loved it. And our team members, we were able to still continue giving them a job and taking care of them. And it was extremely stressful, but it worked out well. It really helped us to come out of COVID. I don't know that we gained more customers, but we definitely became more popular to the community than even before 2019.
Well, and I think it's clear that as much as you're in the business of food, you're also in the business of service.
Yes.
Tell us about your culture. Tell us about the people of Porto's.
I believe that at the beginning, my mother and all of us, we were selling mostly the first few years, the first 5-7 years, were probably Cubans that had also immigrated to the United States. And the majority of them were either friends or friends of friends or family or acquaintances, and they would all come to our house. So imagine if you have a business and people are coming to your house, that's a really unique experience. And I think what came out of that was that we treated everybody with just the utmost respect. As you can see, you know, in the way we price our product, we, even though a lot of customers and business people tell me all the time, is, hey, you could charge a lot more.
You could,
Yeah, and I think In-N-Out is kind of another local company that you could say the same thing about. We do that out of respect to our customer. Do we know we can charge more? Yeah, but do we need to charge more? Maybe not. Because they were friends and family, you know, the culture that we had was to take care of them. Even to this day, we go out of our way to take care of our customers. And it's a huge focus for us. I mean, our local store here, Burbank, we're so proud of them. Last quarter, you know, on social media, you know, like Yelp and Google and all of these, you get a score. And I think they got the highest score we ever had gotten, which was 4.8, almost close to 5.
Congratulations.
Yeah, which is really good. And it's hard to do.
That creates loyal customers.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Well, you mentioned In-N-Out. They're another example of a Southern California family business that's done well. Are you seeing any big picture trends and new innovative approaches from other restaurateurs that you want to talk about?
Yes, that's absolutely. I mean, I think having been in this industry for the last, I don't want to date myself, let's just say 40,
a few years,
40 plus years.
40-ish.
For sure, I would say the last 10 years, we're becoming, you know, a foodie nation, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that we notice the most, when we all travel to another state or city, you know, the first thing we do is, well, what's popular in this city and who's doing well? And now on the long weekends, we'll see thousands of customers that are coming in from San Diego, Vegas, you know,
who heard about this
cities.
LA establishment that have to try.
So that's huge. And I think the quality of the food continues to get better. Food has changed more over the last 10 years than the last 40 years or so.
Well, think about, you know, you mentioned Yelp and reviews. Without those positive reviews, without that loyal customer base that comes week in and week out, you don't get reviews, which then translate into vacationers visiting and seeing where are the places I need to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I do the same thing. I was in Portugal a few years ago, and, you know, I read reviews on these apps and social media. And it was funny because my wife and I went to a restaurant, and there was a line out the door. And I'm thinking, okay, what's the second one? And we go to the second one, another line out the door. And it's kind of, we were both laughing and said, well, now we know where there's a line in the bakery because, you know, on social media, we're scoring really well. And you know, for all the reasons. I mean, I think we're passionate about what we do and we look at it as long-term. We're not trying to figure out, you know, how do we make more money? Or, I mean, it's, you know, when we bring in our new managers and I tell them, look, let's just focus on the quality and let's focus on customer service. A lot of them will ask me, well, how much do we want to grow? And I always tell them the same thing, which is, you know, let's just make sure we take care of everybody that comes through that door as if they were friends and family. And if we do that, the kitchen does a great job with the food and we continue to innovate, then, you know, I can assure you that we're going to continue to grow. We mentioned that Disney, and one of the things that we're going to do in Disney that I didn't mention, we're going to have a bakery, then we're going to have the restaurant. The bakery's name is Portos, my dad's name. So my mom's name is nowhere in sight, other than the picture of her, you know, which we have at all the bakeries.
Yeah.
So the restaurant, her name was Rosa. So we might call it Rosa's by Portos or something like that.
Interesting.
So we're trying to figure out, and we just felt like, you know,
out of respect
she
for
deserves
her,
it.
Yeah.
So we thought, you know, and especially as a woman at that time, the difficulties that there were for women in the restaurant industry at that time, to overcome that and to be successful was just amazing. I mean, in my eyes, it's just not only because she was our mother, but on top of that, she was just a tremendous entrepreneur.
The Burbank location, which was actually the first Portos that I had been to. I'll tell you, I'm a fan. My daughters are fans. I'm going to put you on the spot. Three questions. What's your favorite bakery item? Your favorite non-bakery food? And is there something on the menu that perhaps I haven't given enough attention to?
Well, you know, my favorite changes over time. Bread used to be my all-time favorite. And now I would say these cookies that we call them dulce leche kisses, because they're kind of in the shape of a kiss like that. And that's my number one right now.
Okay.
I can't get enough of them.
Favorite non-bakery food item?
The Cuban chicken plate, which is rice, beans, and chicken, and then the plantains, the sweet plantains.
Mm-hmm.
That's
great.
Probably
very
my
traditional.
Favorite. Yeah, very traditional.
Okay.
And that's my favorite. You know, the area that we've probably over the last few years have grown the most is actually our coffee bar.
Mostly Cuban coffees?
Cubans have a very rich culture of coffee. Yeah. So, I mean, that was our natural to go to. But the customers have really been changing. I would say 6 years ago, coffee was king. Now, cold drinks and things like that have taken over. And I really am crazy about what we do in the summer. It's a yuzu lemonade. Oh, my gosh, it's the best. And then we have strawberry matcha, which is, you know, you wouldn't think that you would find that in a Cuban bakery. But I think we're more representative of the community and the mixtures of cultures that we have in California and in LA. That's part of our what's made us successful, that we've been able to adapt into that.
So, Raul, it's been a pleasure getting to know you today. Next year, 2026, will be 50 years since your mom first opened her storefront on Sunset Boulevard in Echo Park. As you approach your 50th anniversary, what does this milestone mean to you, your family, and how do you envision Portos, the legacy, carrying on?
Wow. I can't believe it's going to be 50 years.
You said you've only been doing it for 40.
Yeah. I started a little late, right? Yeah. We hadn't thought about it much until somebody brought it up about a year ago or so. And we don't know what we're going to do for the 50th. I think that'll be exciting. I mean, about our legacy and how we're going to turn out. Like I mentioned, the fact that we're going to get into the restaurant industry now, that's an avenue. We also started a project that we call it Bake at Home. We're shipping to every state in the United States.
What are they baking at home?
Yeah. So we send the products frozen, basically, but okay. Raw. And they come out spectacular.
They can be authentic Southern California pastry.
Yeah. So it'll be really exciting for me. And I'm sure my parents felt the same way to, you know, at some point to step back and watch the next generation take over and do a great job with it.
There really is. There's evolution in the product. I think about my first visit to Porto's in Burbank compared with my most recent visit in Northridge. I mean, it's pretty much a city block, that location. It's very impressive. I've seen the evolution over the years. So you have nothing but respect from us. I want to thank you for joining us today, for sharing your family story. We're all fans, and we're going to be on the lookout in the next 2 years for what's happening in Downtown Disney. That's going to be exciting.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you so much for having me here. It was a pleasure meeting all of you and being able to share, you know, our history. And
we look forward to seeing how the next generation continues to expand and grow, which you guys have done such a great job building.
It's going to be interesting, and I'm sure they're going to do a great job.
Absolutely. Thank you.
It's been our privilege to be here on behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank. Thank you for listening. To ensure that you're notified about our future podcast releases, be sure to subscribe or follow. Thank you again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, The Language of Executives.